From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Maybe it's just the heat or too many years of the rush life. But a couple of fine writers caught our eye and a lot of others recently with their calls to slow things down, to savor. Rick Bragg in Southern Living, Tim Kreider in an essay that's just flown all over, saying, let's unhook from the hurry. Let's just be a little more. This hour On Point, saying no to the busy life. You can join the conversation. Are you in the busy trap? Do our souls need a little downtime? Where do you find it? How do you get it? You can comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. A couple of great writers with us today thinking about how we spend our time. With us now from Seattle is Tim Kreider, political cartoonist and writer. His latest book is We Learn Nothing. His column, The Busy Trap, ran in the New York Times 2 weeks ago and went right to number one on the Times' most emailed list. Tim Kreider, thank you very much for joining us today.
Hi there, Tom. Pleased to be here.
Great to have you. And from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, we're joined by Rick Bragg, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, now professor of journalism at the University of Alabama, author of a great bunch of books, most famously maybe All Over But the Shoutin'. He's now at work on a life of Jerry Lee Lewis. In his spare time, he's also a contributing editor for Southern Living magazine. His column, The Gift of Loafering, ran in the June issue. Rick Bragg, welcome back to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you both. Tim, first to you, what's the busy trap, sir?
Well, I think I wrote that piece out of a sense of peevishness or just sadness that none of my friends could come out and play with me. I live in New York City now, which is maybe the busyness capital of America, which is the busyness capital of the world. And all my friends are freelance artists, and they have deadlines, and it's difficult for them to work friendship into the rotation. And, you know, I moved there from Baltimore, which is a much more laid-back, hard-drinking, working-class town where it seemed like people devoted most of their time to hanging out and amusing each other over beers.
And yet you say people complain about being busy, but it's not exactly a complaint. It's kind of a boast. You write, if you live in America in the 21st century, you've probably had to listen to a lot of people tell you how busy they are. It's become the default response, busy, so busy, crazy busy. And you write, it's pretty obviously a boast disguised as a complaint. Are we boasting ourselves crazy here, Tim?
Yeah, I was trying to isolate a very upper middle class, white collar strain of busyness, which I speculate is a kind of cover for emptiness or is trying to drown out some sort of fear that your life might be silly or trivial or meaningless, that people don't have enough that's meaningful to do.
Funny thing is, Rick Bragg, what you're describing, this Southern term loafering, is a kind of deliberate drive to emptiness, to have nothing to do. Don't try to make it too meaningful. Just go for a spin.
Oh, absolutely. It's my people are, you know, blue collar working people, and they swing picks and dig coal and work in cotton mills, and you know, they, when they're through with that, the last thing in the world they want to do is go sit inside some room. So they flee. They get in a car or just walk down a road and disappear, and they celebrate it. I had an uncle who loafered for, well, he died at 82. He probably loafered for 65 years of that life. I don't think he ever had a job. It's a celebration of getting away from all that mess.
Tell us about the word, Rick, loafering. Now, we know loafing. I'm just loafing. We got that. But loafering, what's that?
Well, you know, loafing is that you're at work and you're not doing your job, mm-hmm. and that's a despicable thing in the eyes of my people. You know, they celebrate work. Wish they had more of it now. But loafering is wearing out your shoe leather for no good purpose. Loafering is getting in your pickup, disappearing down a road with no particular destination. Because if you have a destination, that's not loafering. And you just count fence posts. And you look at the old women who look at you with disdain. And you look at the old men who look at you with longing and wish they were loafering. And you just enjoy being free.
Just where you are, wherever that may be, rolling along, Rick Bragg writes, I come from a long line of loaferers, from semi-sorry men who vanished for days, if not years, in the highlands and deltas of the Deep South, sometimes with nothing more than $2 and a Zippo lighter, men of beautiful, restless spirit and less than rigid adherence to jobs and spouses and other constricting things. How do you survive as a loaferer in this world, Rick?
Well, let's put it this way. My Uncle Fred, the lifetime loafer, was a guitar picker. Mm-hmm. And he would just suddenly get up from the table with this great, beautiful look in his face, and he would go to the train tracks, and he would get a running start on a slow freight, and with that guitar hanging off his back, wearing a checkered sport coat and two-tone shoes, he'd run alongside and reach for that train. And we might not see him for a year or 2 years. He might be in Tampa, or he might be in Chattanooga.
Yeah.
And he'd pick the guitar, and he would, you know, hang out with some of truly the most interesting people, I think, I could even imagine. And then he would come home, and all my people would feed him and tell him they loved him. And they saw his loafering as kind of a mental illness, because you worked. People worked.
Right. But man, he really took to the road. I mean, we've got a kind of sort of Grand Canyon here between these two things. Tim Kreider, you describe what you call the present hysteria of kind of busyness-philia. On the other hand, this loafering where you just sort of take off and you're gone for a year. Oh, where do you want to live on that spectrum, Tim?
Me? I enjoy unstructured time. I mean, I was a latchkey kid in the 70s, and to me, the most valuable hours of the day back then were the 3 hours between getting home from school, which seemed to me then, and still does, like a crushing bore, and the time when my parents got home. And, you know, in that time, I was free to do whatever I wanted, and that is what I wanted the rest of my life to be like. And, you know, I'm not necessarily talking about idleness. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm on book tour right now, and I'm in Seattle staying with a friend, and yesterday we spent the morning drinking coffee, reading each other's work and talking it over. And that's work of a sort. And then we went shopping in the afternoon. She's on crutches right now, so I was helping her around. And I baked a strawberry rhubarb pie in the afternoon. Now, that to me is not an idle day. And it's a useful one and a productive one, but also it's spent with someone you love, doing things you love. I mean, my naive wish is that everybody got to spend their days that way.
Sounds like a pretty good day, complete with crutches to further slow things down just a little bit.
Yeah, we got to ride one of those carts in the grocery store. Those are fun.
Living large, Tim Kreider.
They can get up to a pretty good clip.
Yeah, but watch out for the pile of, beach balls at the end of the aisle. Tim Kreider and Rick Bragg are with us. We're talking about the pace of life and what it is, what it ought to be, the busy trap. Let's go to our listeners. Elkhart, Illinois, Bill is calling in. Hi, Bill, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Howdy. Thanks for taking my call.
Pleasure.
Enjoy the conversation, and it kind of struck a nerve with me because I've been involved with some environmental and transition-type movements, and slowing down the pace is one of the big things. And when your listener was talking about rambling, you know, as a child, my father on a weekend would pile me into the car, and we'd put the football game on the AM radio station, the Denver Broncos, and he would drive out east of Aurora, Colorado on these gravel dirt roads, just no particular place. And we would listen to the ball game and look at the countryside, and I saw many, many small towns out there in eastern Colorado that, you know, are dear to my heart now, and it just struck a nerve. And I was thinking that, you know, we're constantly marketed at, constantly sold new products, new ideas, new services, and people are struggling to maintain this lifestyle that's been sold to them. It's based, in my humble opinion, purely on materialism, and what we are sacrificing is human relationship and community and appreciation of nature, the world around us. Even if you live in town, you know, you lose the appreciation of your civic surroundings. And so I think your writers are really on to something here. We do need to unplug and slow down and take notes of who and what is around us.
Bill, we've got it, and I so appreciate your call. Rick Bragg, is that what the loafers of your clan get when they slow down? What is it? What's the payoff?
Well, the payoff is that you, the first thing that you get is just a breath. You know, again, I come from people who, they talk about work. People love to take Southerners and talk about them in cliches. And, you know, it's all football and stock car racing and hunting and fishing. But the fact is that mostly what we talk about is work. That's how you gauge the value of a human being. And it's hard work usually. But when you get free, I did a book about cotton mill workers who talked about getting out of that place where you could not breathe because of the white air, because of the cotton. Mm-hmm. And when you get out of that, you just want to go.
And in Rick Bragg's family, many have. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. Here's the Zach Brown Band.
There's nothing wrong with an old cane fishing pole and the smell of early spring. Sit down in a fold-up easy chair on a quiet, shady riverbank. Let the world go on without me. Wouldn't have it any other way, 'cause I ain't in no hurry today. Ain't in no hurry. I'd be a fool now to worry about all those things I can't change. And the time that I borrow can wait till tomorrow, 'cause I ain't in no hurry today.
To work, I love to run, I love to water ski, snowboard, jet ski, skydive, parasail, hang glide, rollerblade, mountain bike, bungee jump. Well, I mean, I'd love to do these things if I ever had the time. I love to work, I love to work, I love to work out after work. Love to spend a little time with this one I'm seeing, except we never really get all time to spend together, so we call each other up and we talk about work. But what I think I really love.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about saying no to the busy, busy life. Jim Infantino behind us with his stress song there of Jim's big ego. I love to work, I love to work, and maybe that's your life. But maybe there's a time to slow it down. My guest today, two writers, have been thinking a lot about that recently. I've shared Tim Kreider with his essay, The Busy Trap, most emailed in the New York Times almost right away. Everybody thinking about, why am I always saying I'm so busy? Rick Bragg, writing in Southern Living magazine about the Southern phrase and fact of loafering, when it's time to kick back, maybe kick way back, and just pay attention to what's right around, just what's along the highway of life. Let's get our listeners right in here. Eve is calling from New York, Rexford, New York. Eve, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I was struck by the comment that one of your people made, that people are real busy because they don't find any meaning in their life and they're hiding from that lack of meaning.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I stopped working about 15 years ago and have been cultivating slow life for a real long time. And what I notice is that people seem really emotionally immature a lot of times. Like they spend all their time being really, really busy and never thinking about anything. And as a result, I find them in conversation very uncreative and just all they're about is buying things. So another person mentioned that there's so much advertising that causes people to want so many things. And our whole political discussion seems to revolve around increasing productivity. But in fact, humans are so productive that we've wrecked the planet. If half the country sat down tomorrow and did nothing, we'd still produce too much junk and too much pollution. And what people really need to do is more thinking about stuff and producing things that are beautiful, like just some art, make it out of junk, or make a garden, make some flowers, or make vegetables.
I love it, Eva. How do you make a living on your, did you say on or underemployed path?
Well, I'm currently underemployed. I teach a little bit for a junior college. I have a PhD in chemistry, and I don't want to do that. I think it's destructive.
Okay.
So I don't work.
Well, you know, nice unwork if you can survive on it. I appreciate your call. I mean, Tim, there's the listener resonating with your idea that maybe it's an emptiness that we're hiding with a lot of busyness. Well, maybe so. Do you fill it with nothingness?
Well, it doesn't sound like she's filling it with nothingness. She sounds like she's creative. Mm-hmm. I mean, I like what she says about people being more creative and having better conversations when they have less to do. I mean, speaking just for myself, I don't feel like I'm that brilliant a thinker or a keen observer of human nature or even a great prose stylist. To the extent that I'm able to write anything that's worth reading at all, it's just because I have time and mental space and quiet to think things over for a long time. I mean, I could not write if I had too much to do.
We've got a listener here, Jim, who says, you know, it sounds cool, but it's not, especially in this ultra-competitive society, to just kick back and sort of take on the lazy life. Now, I don't know what cool means exactly here, but definitely, Tim, people feel the pressure, or are you saying they're making it up to be out there, you know, sort of making a hurricane of productivity, which all of our callers are complaining about because they're afraid for their livelihood sometimes?
Well, as I said, I was speaking of a very specific syndrome, people who are imposing their own busyness on themselves to drown out something that they're afraid of in their lives. But I'm not pretending that it's an easy thing to get out of. I mean, in my essay, I described it as sort of like a traffic jam or a stadium trampling. You know, there's no one person involved who wants to be in that situation or who wants it to happen. It's something we're collectively inflicting on each other. And it certainly doesn't help that the economy is in decline and people have to work more for as little or less money.
Rick, we heard it in the music at the top of this segment, but you can also feel it in our culture. We really swing both ways on this one. I mean, there's a celebration of revving it up and being busy. And then at the same time, we long for a kind of stillness. Here's a listener who writes, expanded consciousness writes to us, I'm going to swallow a 5-hour energy shot, my little red bottle of love, and listen to this show, rock on, all exclamation marks.
Rock on, dude.
Well, there it is. Look on TV. I mean, they are selling those, you know, 5-hour energy shots all over the place. And then what? We turn around and say, now I want to settle down? I don't think so, Rick.
Well, it's funny. I've never met a coal miner who said, I need a Red Bull to get through this. I think what it all boils down to is you work as much as you have to work to survive. And if you see surviving is buying everything that you can see, but that's not really my people. You know, my people work to survive. The people I grew up with work to feed their families and it's not really a thing where they go, you know, I just don't know if I'm too busy. The whistle blows and you go get busy. And I certainly understand that. I have like 4 jobs. I could probably get by with one, but I enjoy my work. I enjoy writing. I enjoy talking about it and enjoy teaching. I enjoy all these things. I work as much as I need to work to make a good living for my people, but I also love every minute of the writing process when I'm through. I'm one of those people who doesn't like writing. I like having written. Mm. But when that's done, you know, when that's done, it's just therapeutic to go places that you haven't seen or I remember once riding with my father in a old car with, you know, Hank Williams on the radio and asking him, where are we going? And he just looked at me and he said, we'll know when we get there. I wish I had that ability I'm a little too busy myself. I'm caught in that trap. Mm-hmm. I probably work too much and too hard. But I do think that it will eat you alive if you don't find a way to get out.
To loafer a little bit. Hi, in Colchester, Connecticut. Hi, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm very much the target of the busy trap article. And the point I'd like to make is that I think that the the children are to blame. And
oh, great. Blame the kids. Great. Brave.
Exactly.
What do you mean?
I love my kids, and I love my family, and my wife and I communicate primarily through text messages revolving around when to pick up and drop off one of the kids at an activity.
Yeah.
And it has taken over so much of our life that we are wrapped up in the next activity of the children. And I lament the process or the culture that pressures us into programming our children accordingly. And the summertime is a little bit different, and I think one of the great gifts is being able to send the child to camp. So my 13-year-old daughter is at a camp where there's no electricity and uniforms and old cabins. And
is that a gift for her? A gift for her, Hi, or a gift for you?
It is a gift that keeps on giving. Very good point. And having that absence, creating that absence, I think puts a little bit in perspective and makes us appreciate each other a little more.
Yeah. Hi, I appreciate your call. You know, Tim, this is really interesting. Lots of parents, and no doubt listeners will relate to this, blame the kids, Hi says. But, you know, there's this feeling that the culture, the economy just won't necessarily support you anymore. It is no hammock to lay in, that's for sure. And everybody seems frenetic about loading their kids up on all those activities that somehow at the end of the line will put them ahead, put them in a position to have a decent life, because you can't count on having it anymore. And that seems to build out this busy fire under an awful lot of people, Tim.
Yeah, I don't have children myself. I actually wrote an essay in my book called The Referendum about people judging each other's lifestyles, you know, married or single, kids or no kids. And in that, I describe getting a text message meant for someone else saying, don't forget to pick Nora up at ballet. And for a second, it was like one of those dreams where you're in the final exam for a class you don't remember taking. I was like, am I supposed to pick up Nora at ballet? It was like a terrible glimpse into an alternate reality where my whole life was booked. You know, I'm not giving advice about child rearing, but speaking as a former child, I remember, as I said, how much I enjoyed not having anything I was supposed to do. How I loved summer.
Absolutely.
It seemed like it went on forever.
And now you'd be off at, maybe you'd be off at High's daughter's camp or one like that, or maybe you'd be off, I don't know, practicing some special thing that would get you over some hurdle of life and closer to some brass ring. I don't even know. Gene in Burlington, Vermont. Gene, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
Pretty well. What do you know, Gene?
Actually, I just find this whole story so apropos. I've never called in. I actually listen to your station all the time at work. It's a factory. There's very few of us because most of our jobs have been sent over to Mexico. But I've been there 27 years, the same seat, the same work. I've helped put two kids through college, and that was my goal.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to go to college.
Good for you. So what do you think about all this talk about loafing and loafering and taking it easy with 27 years on the factory shop under your belt?
Actually, I don't know if I could be a loafer, like some of that one gentleman said, but I certainly, just being out today, it's a vacation day, I have good benefits, but just being out today, I'm going to go visit my mother in the nursing home. That, to me, is what's going to make, it's making me happier. Having the time to do that, not being, you know, treated like something that just has to get the work done, and I'm just not seeing results in my mind for myself. I know I get a paycheck, I know I have good benefits, but the good feeling isn't there, and it's sad, and it saddens me. But I make it every day. I'm just hoping there's someday when I can just feel better about it.
And do you hope to feel better just by having the time to get acquainted with yourself and, I don't know, the wind on your cheeks again?
Absolutely, and I'm not sure I want to get into another routine job like I have. I want to just be able to maybe even just spend time helping other people, volunteering. I don't want to get in that rut every day, the same thing. It's just not fun.
Jean, I'm glad you called, and listen, enjoy this day. It's your vacation day, and loafer it to the max, Jean. Thanks a lot for calling. Let me get one more. Jamestown, Kentucky. Bob, you're on the air. Thanks for calling, Bob.
Hello, Tom. We're enjoying a nice long period of rain here in southern Kentucky after a month-long drought.
Good for you.
Wonderful. Yeah. Listen, I took a cue from my father. He was a 35-year plant manager of a large food company, mm-hmm. and had the chance to retire when he was 55 and decided he was going to work till he was 60. Well, 6 months before he was retired, he dropped dead of a heart attack.
Oh, boy.
Well, 24 years ago, I worked 15 years and long enough to draw a retirement from a railroad company and was offered a large buyout, mm-hmm. and decided I wasn't going to repeat the pattern of my father. And like I say, took the buyout and relocated to a part of the country where the cost of living was pretty cheap.
Yeah.
And enjoyed it back and haven't looked back ever since.
So has it made you a different kind of man than those working folks hustling around you, Bob?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to a high school reunion last weekend and ran into some of my classmates and some of my fellow railroad employees who had recently retired, and one of them's got my wife to the side and said, her wife said that he just didn't know what to do with himself after being retired for a year. Well, I've been off for 24 years, and like I say, I don't have any problem at all.
Bob, it sounds like you're a master of loafering. I mean, Rick Bragg, can you see in a person the difference between one who's just sort of burdened down by hustle, hustle, work, work, and one who's found the time to have a little loafering built into life?
Well, I think it's all, you know, trapped inside our own terrifying heads, I think. I knew an old man in my hometown named Bill Joe Cheney, which might be my favorite name of all time. And he found out late in his life that he was dying. And he had worked hard all his life, and he knew there was a limited amount of time on the horizon, so he got himself a new pickup, put his best friend in the passenger seat, and headed for the North Georgia mountains, and went down roads he'd never been down before. And he counted those mailboxes, and he counted those fence posts, and he stopped on the side of the road and watched bulls fight in the pasture, and I don't think he wasted a second of the rest of his life. Some people can't rest. My brother Sam, when he gets, you know, off in the afternoon, he goes immediately to his shop and starts working on machinery. That's how he rests. I think we all kind of have to decide what we can stand. I'm a great hypocrite. I am one of those folks that we were talking about who says he's busy all the time. I really have been doing 18 hours a day, 7 days a week on a book deadline. And you're lecturing us
on loafering. You.
Exactly. Exactly. Because I'm an idiot. You know, what I should be is practicing what I preach. I should be headed somewhere with a fishing rod in the back. But I'm just not real bright.
And you're honest enough to write, not that much of a fisherman. You say, I couldn't catch a fish standing over a wash tub sober with a stick of dynamite. And yet there's got to be a way to find our way to a little leisure here. Here's Bruno Mars with the Lazy Song. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Tom Ashbrook, this is On Point. We're talking this hour about saying no to the busy, busy life, about slowing down, getting lazy maybe, wasting a little time, living. Tim Kreider is with us. He wrote the Busy Trap column in the New York Times. went right to the top of the most emailed piece in the Times. For some time there, a lot of people thinking about being trapped in busyness. Rick Bragg is with us from Tuscaloosa, Alabama, Pulitzer Prize-winning journalist, author of Oliver But the Shoutin', The Prince of Frogtown, and more. He wrote a column for Southern Living magazine called The Gift of Loafering. Kind of a southern version of loafing, but with a twist. This is not at work. This is way away from work, just out on the back road, out on the highway. He joins us from Tuscaloosa. Tim, Rick, we got lots of interesting response here. I mean, Patrick says, loafering is good for you. I fancy the Tom Sawyer image of laying on a raft that lazily floats down a river surrounded by the sound of nature. Then Jeff writes, to me, it seems like 21st century loafing or loafering involves Facebook and cat videos. I guess the implication there that a lot of people do loaf. They just don't do it out on a highway, Rick. Jenny is kind of keying in on the loafering men in your family and maybe relating to the women. She says, men, all caps, have the option to hop the train like cute old grandpa. But women are tied to hearth and home by virtue of providing stability for their children. And I got one more here. AC, she's just not into it. She says, after being stuck in hospitals for months at a time with more visits expected in the future, I cannot even comprehend how you loaf. She says, I want to live, think, learn, do everything I can while I can. And there's two reactions, Tim, to the great divide. Some want to loaf and some just want to fill up that calendar and enjoy it.
You know, I'm interested by that comment about having spent a lot of time in the hospital. And I was very touched by the caller who talked about being very grateful she could spend time with her mother, mm-hmm. who's ill,
nursing home,
today. A couple of years ago, I wrote about this also in my book. I had to spend a month sitting with my mother when she was in the hospital. And I know you're not supposed to say this, but that's kind of a drag. Hospitals are depressing places, and it's boring simply to sit in a room with someone with no amusements. I mean, we hate being bored in this culture. We're afraid of it. But, you know, a friend of mine told me, I know this seems like a drag now, but you are always going to be glad you had this time with your mother. And I was. I mean, this is the worst thing work does to people, is prevent them from spending time with people they love, often the very people they're working for.
But AC's in there, and she's listening to us talking about, taking it easy and kicking back, and she says, no, I've been burdened, it sounds like, by some health problems, and what I want is the opposite. I want that full calendar. I want that more life, Tim.
Yeah, well, I'm not saying I wish I were in the hospital. but it doesn't sound like what she's talking about is simply filling up the date book. She wants to do stuff that is meaningful to her. And I feel like, when people talk about busyness, they're not talking about stuff that's meaningful. I mean, I noticed in the hospital, nobody who worked there ever seemed rushed or frantic, even though their business is literally a matter of life and death. The people I know who complain about being busy and always seem hectic are, interns at lifestyle magazines.
Why is it a boast? What makes busyness a boast these days? Because if everybody's busy, what's so special about being busy?
I don't know. We've got a Puritan work ethic in this culture. Being busy is a good thing. It's very rare that you ask anyone how they're doing or what they're up to lately, and they say nothing, just hanging out. I mean, I wrote that piece as something of a provocation. It felt almost heretical to come out and say, I am not busy.
Is that a New York thing, Rick Bragg? Do you have people bragging about their busyness in Tuscaloosa?
Oh, gosh, yeah. I've been bragging about being busy forever. it gets me out of doing things I don't want to do.
Well, yeah.
That's my primary reason for saying how busy I am, is that way I don't have to do the things that would make me more busy. First of all, if I had to loafer on Facebook or on Twitter, I'd take a long walk off a short pier. tweeting doesn't even sound like something that a grown man should do. That's not what we're talking about. And we're not talking about one thing or the other.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about that time most of us have. And I fully realize that my mother raised, three boys by herself. She pulled a cotton sack. She could not loafer. Every minute of every day, she worked. And when she went to sleep at night, I hope she loafered in her dreams. because that would have been the only freedom that she had.
That sounds great.
So, you know, so we're talking about when you've done what you have to do, then maybe if you're very lucky, you get to do what you want to do. And loafering seems like the, you know, there are two kinds of really time wasting in the Deep South. There's loafering, which means you're in motion. Then there's piddling, which means you're not. And I can do both. I can loafer and piddle. And one of these days, that is all I'm going to do. I don't want to be an old man writing books. That's just, you know, writing books is like the digging taters part of storytelling. It's hard. So I want to be an old man who doesn't do a thing. And when I am going to scare fish. I won't catch any. I'll just go and scare them, startle them. And I'm not going to do anything except think about maybe I'll think about right.
You can piddle in the morning and loafer in the afternoon. Saranac,
that's my dream.
Saranac, New York. Andrew's calling. Andrew, you're on the air, my friend.
Hi. In case anybody's wondering, Saranac is the river that runs between Saranac Lake and Plattsburgh, New York, on Lake Champlain.
Absolutely.
I met a child, had a childhood. And at 21, I shunned it all, moved into a friend's house, slept on the couch for 10 years. When I finally inherited some money from an uncle that had died 20 years earlier, instead of buying a Corvette, I bought an apartment building against my parents' advice, and another building, and another, and another. And 15 years later, my mother went to pick up one of the checks at the lawyer's office. She calls me, she says, Andrew, this is some serious money. Anyways, a couple years later, I had a cancer scare. And a year later, I said, that's it. I can't take the stress, the high pressure, the endless days and nights and weekends. So I bought a plane ticket to California, and I flew out there and bought a Corvair and a Suburban and shipped them home. And I did it 12 more times, and I just came back from Phoenix last year driving an old diesel Suburban towing a Corvair pickup truck. And I'm just lying here underneath one of my Corvairs right now. Business runs well. My wife runs it when I take my loafering trips across the country.
So are you?
And, I've made videos of all my escapades across the country, towing these Corvairs and driving these Suburbans to all the Corvair shows.
So the Corvair is your avocation here, going to shows and having the old models and showing them off. And is it really 10 times across the country to do that?
Oh, yeah. You can watch it on YouTube. I'm Corvair Wild on YouTube, and every single trip, 3 videos a day for the last 5 years, and I've got a bunch of people that watch them, and I've met these people. And I go to the shows, and my phone gets turned off, and I forget my business, and I forget the leaky toilets and the hot water tanks that aren't making hot water.
So let me ask you, were you a better man when you were building that business, or are you a better man now when you're lying under your Corvair and puttering along the road?
Broken down on the side of the road. I love it. I'm a better man now. I don't yell at people as much. I'm not under stress. The business, thank goodness, has been successful. I've made some wise moves in life thanks to my upbringing that finally came around after years of trying to ignore it. And I buy low, and my wife and I run it really successfully, and I have the money to be able to loafer around. My retirement is pretty much set. And like I said, I'm sitting here looking at my 62 Corvair convertible. Going to get it on the road and go to a junkyard today and loaf around making videos for YouTube. I'm Corvair Wild.
You're going to make us all loafer envy here. Tim Kreider, are you feeling that as you hear the guy who's, of course, he built part of it, but there's the pot of money from the uncle. Now he's set, and whatever you want. Does that make it easy to not be busy, Tim?
Well, he sounds like he's had the best of both lives, and now he gets to goof off with a clear conscience.
Yeah, a little bit of that. Of course, it helps to have the pot down from the uncle, but he's built.
Yeah, the dead uncle plan is a good one. Well, if you can swing it.
To a point, you're right. The Puritans turned work into a virtue, evidently forgetting that God invented it as a punishment. maybe our callers figured out to have a little bit both ways. Chris in Arlington, Massachusetts. Chris, you're on the air.
Oh, hi, Tom.
Hi.
Great show.
Thank you.
So, actually, you were talking about the health. There were some people talking about health problems a few calls ago.
Yeah.
And that dovetails into what I was going to say. And because I have a whole host of health problems, which means that I'm always going to appointments. And I tend to make the best use of my time, a loafering, which is a great term. So say, for instance, I'll go into Harvard Square where I have some appointments.
Yeah.
And I'll just walk around, look at people, watch the whole world go by, and it's kind of there's a contrast between what I'm doing and what I perceive to be other people doing, which is they're hustling and bustling and going to work here and there. But for me, it's just, you know, it's a wonderful experience usually to see and hear these people and meet people. I meet people all the time.
Take your time, and it comes to you. We're glad to hear that right there, Chris, and good luck with it. One more, if I may, Brian in Nashville. Brian, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My dad was a World War II veteran, and when he was serving overseas in Europe during the Second World War, he got a great fondness for motorcycles. And 20 years later, when I was growing up in the 1960s, he bought a motorcycle, much to my mother's dismay. And he was a real estate developer at the time, and a couple of times a week, we would just get on the back of his motorcycle and ride around in neighborhoods that were coming up in the town we were living in at the time. And sometimes we'd just get on some backcountry roads and ride around and look at stuff. And it just gave me a great appreciation for just tooling along a road and no particular destination. And I'm 54 years old now, and that skill that I learned from my dad is something I think has helped me to survive in some very demanding career roles in my adult life, and it's one of the things. My hat's off to my dad for teaching me how to do that.
That's a gift, and I wonder if the parents who are, you know, packaging their kids up to 20 activities a day are they're handing on some kind of gifts, but maybe not that one exactly.
Three more. I've got a 7-year-old daughter now, and there are times when just a couple of times a week we'll just get in the car and go ride around, and we stop here or there, but there's no particular plan in mind, and I think she appreciates that.
Brian, I appreciate your call. Let me get one more from your backyard, if I may. Randy's calling from Nashville as well. Hi, Randy. You're on the air.
Hey, Tom. I taught 4th and 5th grade for 20 years, and one of the things I thought is we give kids bad instruction when we tell them to work all the time in school and then give them homework at night. So I never gave homework or tried not to, and tried to have the kids do the work in school. And I never felt like I was pressured for time or didn't have enough time to do things because I organized my class so that I could get things done during the day.
Well, lucky for you, and maybe lucky for those kids. Rick Bragg, at the same time, we're told all the time it's a dog-eat-dog global competition economy out there, and if we don't climb way up the ladder and study hard, you know, we're going to lose our bacon.
I'm still amazed at that guy who managed to get the name of his website on the air 4 times because he was talking about killing time.
Yeah, right.
You know,
How did he build that empire of apartment buildings anyway?
Yeah, I'm still staggered by that. You know, if I could waste time and
publicize
national advertising, yeah, man.
Right.
You know, I think I really do believe that you have to be careful about when you talk about what people should do in an economy like ours, because so many people are just doing what they have to do. Mm-hmm. They're just doing what they have to do to survive, and they're scared to death. And, you know, working folks, you know, don't seem to have any champion. And so there, I understand being frantic. I think when I talk about killing time, I talk about killing it after you've stomped all the fires and killed all the snakes in your life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once you've done that, once you've killed all those snakes, and, you know, as we all know, you're always killing snakes.
Mm.
But once you've killed as many as you can, then draw a breath and then... And again, it's easy to say, but man, it's hard to do. It's hard to draw a breath. It's hard to put something down when all around you is uncertainty and outright fear. But obviously, from listening to this show, people are finding a way to draw that breath and bake that rhubarb pie and I didn't even know what a rhubarb was until I was 30 years old. They're finding – it's true. And when I ate one, I still wasn't sure about it. But
they're better with strawberries.
I bet. But I think we're you know, we find that way to loafer. And of course, it's easier to loafer when gas isn't $5 a gallon. And but I think we find a way. I think we have to.
A luxury to loafer, Tim Kreider, a luxury to relax off that busy path, or I don't know, the way to substantial life.
Well, Rick's quite right, and I'm certainly not blaming anyone who's already harried and exhausted by circumstances for their own lives. I was just trying to remind a lot of people who like to pretend that these things are externally imposed that they do have choices. And there are things you can use as respites that are free, like nature and like not having the internet or cable.
Life, Tim Kreider says, is too short to be busy. Certainly to be too busy too often, no question about it. It's been good to spend a little summertime with the two of you. We're grateful for the spin you put on it for us and maybe the direction you had us in. Tim Kreider with the New York Times, author of We Learn Nothing and his column, The Busy Trap. You can link to it at our website. Tim, thanks so much for being with us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
Rick Bragg, it's always a pleasure to have you here, author of Oliver But the Shoutin' and a lot more, writing a new book on Jerry Lee Lewis, 18 hours a day. You deserve a little loafering, Rick. Get it done and come back and see us. Thanks for joining us from Tuscaloosa.
It was a pleasure.
We'll go out with our friend Greg Brown and Eugene. I'm Tom Ashbrook. Thanks for joining us. This is On Point.
There's still a little bit of heaven in there, and I want to show it due respect. This looks like a good spot up here. You can try me on the cell, but most places I want to be, it doesn't work. Sometimes you got to listen hard to the sounds old Mother Earth still makes, all on her own.